This content is machine generated. Please excuse any mispronunciations. How Can Christians Respond to Online Accusations? By Zachariah Mays, Groups and Involvement Minister, First Christian Church, Springfield, Ohio. Genesis 39 tells the story of Joseph and the persistent temptation of Potiphar's wife. Desiring Joseph, she pursued him repeatedly, until one day the two of them were alone in the house. When Joseph refused her advances, she grabbed his cloak, but Joseph wrestled free and ran out of the house. Potiphar's wife responded by making false accusations against Joseph, claiming he attacked her while the two of them were alone. These false accusations carried significant consequences for Joseph. His character and integrity were wrongly attacked, and the consequences that followed were severe. His boss, the captain of Pharaoh's guard, fired him and had him thrown in jail. Socially, he would have been deemed a predator and would carry the stigma of shame into any relationships he had with family or friends. Having forged his character and integrity before it was tested, the truth was ultimately revealed, and Joseph was eventually restored to a place of honor by those in power. Fast forward a couple thousand years, and we find that this problem is just as prevalent now as it was then. For church leaders today, false accusations are inevitable, and in a digital world, they spread faster and do more damage than ever before. The question is not whether we as Christian leaders will face them, but how we will respond. Faithful leadership requires discernment, courage, and a commitment to truth over reputation. As the modern story goes, someone's character or integrity will be attacked through false allegations, and as a result, that person will now be viewed and treated negatively. This happens more often because online spaces remove accountability and increase boldness. Admittedly, I do not have social media, but I am aware of the kind of interactions that take place in online comment sections. Having grown up in the earliest days of social media, MySpace, Facebook, Zanga, etc., and watching it evolve over the years left me with little desire to partake. One reason is that social media algorithms prioritize capturing and holding attention, regardless of how that is accomplished. According to Meta's Transparency and Algorithm documentation, what a user primarily sees on their feed is content with lots of comments, reactions, shares, and time spent on the content, in addition to the paid-for content of advertising by companies. Researchers at New York University found that moral outrage spreads 20% faster than other content, leading to the dominating narratives of negative and toxic material. A single comment or accusation can spread quickly online and shape how people perceive it, regardless of whether it is true or false. Readers take the content at face value, believe it to be true, and the damage is done. So what happens when church leaders are faced with false accusations made in an online environment designed to spread content rapidly? How do we protect the church's integrity without pouring gas on the fire? And when a response is necessary, how should we respond? Do we go on the defensive against every accusation? As one of my friends in ministry said, when discussing this topic, I am 0% concerned with defending my personal reputation. But if the reputation of Christ is at stake, then it's worth engaging. A.W. Tozer echoed this sentiment in a lecture to students at Wheaton College. God said He would do my fighting for me. Exodus 14:14. If you insist on fighting, I warn you, you're up against a terrible enemy. So if you hear something that is said about you, do not run around trying to straighten it out. It is just like trying to pick soot off the front of your white shirt. You just smear it around. Let it go. God will blow it off for you. It will not hurt you. Chasing down every personal accusation is a losing battle. Joseph trusted God to vindicate him, and Jesus modeled the same restraint under false accusation. But church leaders must distinguish between personal attacks and threats to the church's witness. When the church is the target, the question is not whether to respond, but how, and sometimes, whether repentance is required. What if the accusation is true? These moments define leadership, and faithful leaders choose truth over reputation every time. To answer these questions effectively, we should first consider the nuances that exist with different accusations. Different kinds of accusations call for different kinds of responses. Clearly, the biblical wisdom is to discern the necessary response. This list is not meant to be exhaustive. Rather, it illustrates some of the nuances that exist in this type of scenario. High risk, high impact allegations. One type of allegation requires follow-up and thorough investigation. If true, these accusations carry high risk and significant consequences. Examples might include inappropriate relationships involving a pastor, unsafe behavior around minors, abuse of authority, spiritual manipulation, or serious moral failure by leadership. Thinking back to the example from Genesis 39, allegations concerning moral, ethical, and legal breaches of conduct should be taken seriously, regardless of the preconceived beliefs about a person's integrity and character. There is no shortage of leaders who have been found guilty of such accusations, despite many who have said, "They were such a good person. I would have never expected that." These are the kinds of allegations leaders dread the thought of coming their way. Recent history makes this clear. These situations should be handled with urgency, transparency, and, when necessary, outside accountability. With the next two types of allegations, there is a need for prayerful discernment. A good rule of thumb when discerning whether to respond can be found in James 1:19, New International Version. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Emphasis added. There is wisdom in slowness. There is wisdom in intentionally praying for additional wisdom. There is also wisdom in seeking advice from trusted Christian brothers and sisters. Uncertain, but potentially harmful allegations. Another type of allegation is one you believe to be false, but the potential ramifications of the allegation, if true, would carry serious consequences for the church's gospel effectiveness. Here, I think about examples like a ministry leader being accused of belittling volunteers, someone claiming a staff member is sharing confidential information, or a teacher misrepresenting church doctrine. As a church leader, you should investigate, gather information carefully without becoming accusatory or forcing a conclusion. What matters most here is discovering what is true. Distorted or partial truth allegations. One of the last types of allegations to consider is a distorted story that intentionally omits key details to spread a false narrative. This tends to be one of the trickiest to handle because of the emotional tone and hurt that typically underlie the motivations for such storytelling. In many cases, time will ultimately reveal what is true of character and integrity. Any response will likely pour gasoline on an already raging fire. As you discern these situations, if a response is deemed wise and necessary, Matthew 18 provides us with a helpful framework for handling relational conflict. While the principal application is in dealing with sin in the church, the wisdom in the principle applies here as well. Matthew 18:15-16 tells us, "If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault, just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses." Face-to-face conversation is the minimum standard for engaging someone who has made an allegation online. Often, the invitation alone diffuses the situation and communicates a level of care that may not have been assumed initially. Beyond this, nonverbal communication, lost online, matters more than we realize. As shepherds, we have a responsibility to initiate these conversations, even when they're uncomfortable. A key question to ask is, does this impact gospel effectiveness? Jesus made it clear in John 17:23 when he said, "I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me." From the very words of Jesus, nothing impacts gospel effectiveness like unity. And, if possible, we should seek to restore unity within the body. When accusations arise, leaders are faced with a defining moment: protect reputation or pursue truth. Faithful leadership chooses truth every time. Some situations will call for silence. Others will demand investigation, accountability, and even public repentance. But in every case, the integrity of the church is not preserved by controlling the narrative. It is preserved by aligning with what is true. In a world quick to accuse and slow to listen, the church must be different.